Nick Ashew on the Fan. 10-7 now, TCU over North Carolina. Bill Belichick, Chapel Bill. We had we love nicknames, don't we? Oh God, I wonder how, like, in all seriousness, I wonder how long Bill Belichick is actually coaching in North Carolina, because for them it's a win-win, right? Like, even if he's there a couple years, puts a spotlight on the program, helps him with recruiting, maybe builds it up a little bit, you know. But, like, how long before does he get bored? College football has gotten closer to the NFL in the sense that it's a business now, and they have GMs. You're paying guys, and it's a whole new world. But at what point, you know, what if the NFL did come calling again? Here's a scenario for you. What if North Carolina makes the college football playoff? Does an NFL team try to bring Bill Belichick back to the NFL? I think there's a very good chance that happens. After one season in college, because he'd love to be the all-time winningest coach in NFL history. That still is on his mind. He has the chance to do it if he goes back to the NFL.
You think Dallas calls him if they go 7-10?
So that right there has always been my sort of like perfect match for me.
Why did they not go to him last year?
That always made sense to me, Ben. Bill Belichick going to the Cowboys, because here's the thing. There is one guy that can tell Jerry Jones to shut the hell up, and it's Bill Belichick. That's the guy. What's Jerry going to say?
It just feels like they punted by going another year of McCarthy.
I never really understood why that, unless the conversations maybe happened behind the scenes and it just wasn't right. And maybe Belichick wanted a break and wanted a year off and didn't want to deal with Jerry Jones. Now he's refreshed. He's got a young girlfriend. He's feeling vibrant again. He's got a whole brand, Gold Digger or whatever they got, at least trying to trademark or whatever the case is. They've applied for that trademark, apparently. It makes perfect sense to me. And if North Carolina has a really good season, here's the thing. If North Carolina wins more games than the Cowboys this year and I'm Jerry Jones, who the hell do you think I'm calling this offseason? It's Bill Belichick, without question. Also, those press conferences. Oh, give me that. Inject it into my veins. Can you imagine? Well, we are so excited to have ourselves, Bill Belichick. We want to win football games, and I want to prove to the Cowboys fan base that we want to win football games. Right, Bill? Oh yes, we're here to win football games, and I'm here, and it's on. We want to beat the Commanders and the Eagles, and it's on to them. Oh, give me it all. I'll take all of it.
What's the narrative surrounding him is that he wanted general manager control as well?
Yes, and a lot of teams didn't want to give that to him because he's got too much of an old school mindset on the NFL, which I understand. I do, and that would be maybe the hang up. But maybe after a year of coaching in college football, Bill Belichick's like, I don't need as much of that, or he has enough discussions behind the scenes with other people besides Jerry Jones, the other Joneses, and they're like, look, like we're on the same page in terms of what we want to build. You can have input, but like, we want to make the final say. We want you to coach this team. Maybe he would relinquish some of that. I don't know. But I'm so glad you said that, because that is always what I have thought is a perfect, like, again, we've had Jimmy Johnson, we've had Bill Parcells in Dallas. Why not Bill Belichick to wrap it up in his career?
Because honestly, I feel like you don't have a lot to lose if you're Dallas in that situation, because on paper, offensively, the roster is probably close enough to find some success in the postseason if they could get the damn defense right. But Belichick is a guy that made his entire living installing the best game plans ever defensively every single week. So that you could help you out from that standpoint. If you do it for 2 years or whatever and doesn't work out, you make the playoffs once, or you don't make it at all, and you just kind of move on. He probably retires.
And again, it doesn't even have to, like, to just get that team to a consistent level of, I guess, respect again. If you're a Bill Belichick, you go to Dallas and they're just a team that people look at every single week and say, like, they've got things buttoned up. It's the Patriot way in Dallas, and Jerry Jones steps back a little bit to let Bill Belichick do his thing. It would make sense for both sides. You don't have to win a Super Bowl there. But then again, I'd much rather have the dysfunction in Dallas and Bill Belichick cleaning that thing up. But it makes perfect sense. Bill Belichick is the only guy that could tell Jerry Jones to shut the hell up. He's the only one. You know, Jerry's still going to have his press conferences after games. Well, I got to say, oh yes, Bill was real. He was real good today. You know, he coached the team well. That's why we hired him. He's a legend. Like, you're going to still get that, but you're going to get a team that's probably going to be a lot more prepared. Now, again, Brian Schottenheimer hasn't actually been a head coach, so maybe it works out. I doubt it. He was probably like the 10th choice for them. But they also just dragged the thing out. You know, the whole coaching situation in Dallas was another example. We spent so much time talking about Micah Parsons that, like, there hasn't been a discussion of just how they've handled coaching situations over the years in Dallas. It's been, they just dragged the thing out over and over. I mean, my God, Jason Garrett, how many 8-8 seasons did Jason Garrett have in Dallas where Jarrah just kept him around because he loves him like a son? It's just like so mismanaged in Dallas. So mismanaged. The fact that that team hasn't had more like 4-12 or 4-13 seasons, depending on how many games were in the season, the fact that they haven't had more of those really should be applauded. Because the way that the business is done there, it is all about Jerry Jones. All of it. And I'm here for it. The more of that, the better. Because it eliminates one team in the division you have to worry about. Because now, Commanders have expectations of winning the division and the Super Bowl and all of this in 1 year. And it's great. But the reality of it is 12 wins change that whole mindset, right? So it's you looking at the division going, okay, well, the Giants and Jackson Dart, eventually that works out, and they kind of are able to build that team up to being at least respectable again. And then, you know, the Cowboys and Jerry Jones steps back. I know it's not going to happen, but, like, if it did, then you're looking at, like, oh, God, this division's even tougher here. So, listen, it's a good problem to have if you're the Commanders. But that hype, man, it's so ballooned. There has to be some level of perspective of where we are with this team right now. It's a good problem to have. In fact, it's a great problem to have. Champagne problem, as they say. But you also then still have to almost temper the expectations. And the hope, obviously, is that within the organization, it's much more of a focus on, you know, again, it's the focus on the Giants this week, without question, for this team. But for bigger picture as an organization, like, we don't have a regular season example of what they're going to look like yet. And that's what makes week one so important in the NFL. It doesn't make or break what you're going to do that season. We've seen plenty of teams get off to rough starts and make the playoffs and have success and all these different levels. The Bengals always come to mind for me, though sometimes they've dug themselves too deep of a hole. It's because, you know, Joe Burrow's always hurt. So that's part of the problem to start the season. But, you know, you can see what goes on in practice. That's still not a game. You can see what goes on in the preseason. That's definitely not a game. Right now, it's still all about all the work that's been put in the offseason, building off of what happened last year, and everybody coming back better than where they were before. And I think that's one of the most important things, is that you just have to show that you're a team that continues to get better, because if you're a one-hit wonder, it's fireworks, right? Ooh, pretty. Yay. Show's over, right? The grand finale was essentially what happened against Detroit, if that's the case, then in the playoffs. That was the grand finale of the fireworks show, and then it all tapered off against Philadelphia. If that's, you know, if they take a major step back this year. Because, like, if we're being honest with ourselves, if they had a 6-7 win season last year, you're not going through this whole offseason with the Terry McLaurin contract constantly hanging over your head as an organization like a dark rain cloud. You're trading him. The reason why they kept Terry McLaurin around and, you know, paid more than they essentially, by reports, wanted to, it's because they're in win-now mode, but yet they're also rebuilding on the fly. Ben, you talked about the Wizards with me, and it wasn't on the air, but, like, everybody's mad about the Denny Avdia trade with the Wizards, and it's like they're trying to build the youngest team possible right now and not pay anybody a significant amount of money. That's where the Commanders would have been if they had not won 12 games last year. They're not paying anybody a big contract. They're getting all the young guys out there, and they're trying to just build around the young core that they have.
Yeah, could you imagine if they really were what people expected them to be last year, where maybe if a successful season looked like 7 or 8 wins for them? You know, it wasn't the case. Obviously, you have a gem, a rare breed of quarterback at a young age on the rookie contract. So while you're still trying to build the roster to what it is, because, you know, Adam Peters and this crew came over, and you saw the pause, you heard the pause that Adam Peters gave when they asked about the roster of this team, and his actions reflect how they felt about the roster overall. They've gutted this thing completely, and they're trying to build it their way, but they also have such a good quarterback that they might mess around and win the Super Bowl in the time being. So, you know, you put it perfectly when you say they are rebuilding on the fly, but they're also actively seeking to win, because you can only have a quarterback on this kind of deal for, you know, a few years.
It's like trying to build a small business on the side of your full-time job. You're doing two things at once. You're building something from scratch, but you're also then have the mindset at the same time of focused on something that's here and now and established and that you need to build up as well, if that makes sense. Like, that's kind of where the mindset of this organization is. And you know, we wouldn't have just been this way. But again, this is a much better spot to be in. And it does, you know, listen, they've now moved on to next offseason. Like, the front office is obviously going to think about guys they have to add during the season. They're still focused on that, but they're already looking ahead to next year. And I keep saying this, but it's really important to keep in mind that they're already thinking about what Jaden Daniels is going to cost. Remember how the Chiefs handled things, and remember how the Cowboys have handled things. As just two examples, right? Think of how those two teams have handled their quarterback contract negotiations. The Chiefs said, as soon as we can pay Patrick Mahomes, we're doing it. Now, his first year as a starter, he won the MVP and they won a Super Bowl. So, you know, it's like, what are we messing around here for? Let's just get this done. So it's a lot easier to just know where you're going to go in that direction if you're the Chiefs versus the Cowboys, where Dak's a great regular season quarterback, but the playoffs are a whole different animal. So, again, not apples to apples, but Cowboys mess up everything in negotiation, so that's how it goes. But, you know, if you are an organization that has having some level of success or wants to have success and wants to build something that has any level of longevity whatsoever, you're thinking about money down the road and how you're constructing that roster and what guys are going to be sticking around, what guys have something to prove. Like, all of this is now going to be about next offseason for them, because Frankie Louvu is going to be up. Laremy Tunsil is going to have a deal. Biotis is going to be up. Jaden Daniels, it's 2027. They can start talking deal. Like, it's not that far off. It's quick when you can start talking about extensions. And guys that are in the last year of their deal, they don't want to play in the last year of their deal. So you've got a bunch of big contracts potentially next offseason. So they're thinking about all that too. It's not just based on now. And again, the decisions that are going to be made, if this team wins 10 games this year and you see regression, are they willing to write as many big checks like they did for Terry McLaurin? Is it one of those things where they say, we want to get younger and still we're willing to take a step back? You know, and I put it in quotes, step back, but it's really not a true step back, but they really then start establishing their core that's going to be there for a more long-term basis. Because listen, rookie NFL contracts are helpful. Teams love it, right? It's why the NFL adopted that. You had guys, I mean, remember back in the day, Matt Stafford, when the Lions didn't even draft him yet, you could negotiate with anybody you wanted if you had the number one overall pick. You know, Matt Stafford's getting, guys are getting, at the time, they were big contracts for quarterbacks that hadn't played a down in the NFL. You had to fix that. But now, if you draft well, you can be more of what the Patriots were, where it's, when guys are up for big deals, bye. You know, work for them for 20 years. Not everything worked, but it's not all going to be 100%. You're not going to nail every draft pick you have. This is impossible. There's no way that any team will ever do that. But drafting well is key moving forward for this team, too. And they're already thinking about this. They're scouting college football. They're looking at where they're, you know, types of players that are going to be a part of their plans moving forward. All of that. And this is what's so massively important for them to continue to establish this growth, so it's not talked about inflated expectations anymore, where they're proven and it's established. But a long way to go, because again, week one is 6 days away. So you got to play the first football game of this season for that to matter. But that's for the coaching staff and everybody else to focus on. The front office is kind of in a little bit of everything. 10-7, TCU still over North Carolina. 4:40 to go in the second quarter. So pick six from North Carolina. TCU's up 17-7. And I was telling Bender in the break, what if this goes the other way? And instead of a lot of success and Bill Belichick then going to coach the Cowboys after they win seven games next year, what if it's actually just a disaster? Like, there's also a chance that that's the case. Oh, I mean, again, if you're not a UNC alum, this is the most interested anybody's ever been in North Carolina football in a very, very long time. Unless, of course, you're the Patriots scouting Drake May. It's about as far as it goes. So, 17-7, you probably don't actually care about that game, but you know, Bill Belichick makes it at least a little bit interesting. I'll probably be this way. You know what? I'd actually take this a step back, and because you and I started talking about this, Ben, I don't think North Carolina has to be good this year for Bill Belichick to get NFL head coaching looks again. I think a team like the Cowboys, no matter what, if they win seven games or something along those lines this year, I think there's a chance that Jerry Jones wants Bill Belichick there no matter what, just for splash. Because that's what makes the Brian Schottenheimer hire so random. It's like that's the least splashy move you could have possibly made, where people are like, who? What? Like, it's like when Jim Zorn was hired in Washington years ago. You're like, wait, what? What? It just, it feels like one of those things where no matter what, Jerry Jones is going to look and go, you know, I got to make a splash now. We got to do something different. I don't think it really matters. I think you still could get hired in Dallas no matter what. I really do. I thought you were going to jump in there, Ben, but that's fine. No worries.
My bad, my bad.
It's okay.
I was doing that ROC chapter. You know how it is.
Yeah, I know.
No, but I don't know. The situation with Dallas is just so like fickle to me because I just really can't get a perception of like what Jerry would stoop to at this point in how he is, how hard-nosed he's been in his own thing, you know, essentially trying to build his own brand the way he sees fit, the my way or the highway mantra that he's kind of built for himself in the Dallas Cowboys organization. Would he be willing to give that up for Belichick? I don't know.
Honestly, I don't think he would, but Bill Belichick's the only person, like I said, that could tell him to shut the hell up. But let's remember how it ended with Jimmy Johnson. Let's remember how it ended with Bill Parcells. It's all the same.
Pride's a hell of a drug.
Yeah. I mean, like, those are coaches that had similar, you know, I guess you could say they had similar profiles, right? To the point where they were powerful, they were successful coaches, and they were big personalities, and they were strong-willed. And didn't matter. But, you know, you think maybe Jerry Jones later in life now, maybe a 7-win season humbles him, or softens him just a little bit, just enough to say, let's go out and make the, you know, it's, listen, anything's possible with the Cowboys. They can't get out of their own way. That's really what it comes down to. And there's ego running that organization. And look, I understand why Jerry Jones still approaches things the way that he does. I mean, this is who he's been. There's a documentary about him being, you know, a risk taker and all this and finding some glory hole and all that, right? Like, this is what's made him who he is. He loves the negotiation. He loves the fight. And it's worked for him. And it works in a lot of areas, right? It works in a lot of business. But it's a lot different when you're somebody that thinks you're a football mind when, like, you're really not. Like, he's a businessman first. I know there's a football background. I understand, like, when he was, you know, the Cowboys were in their prime and why he ran the team. And, like, I understand that. But in reality, he's even said himself in the past, if it was anybody else at the GM of this team, I would have fired him a long time ago. So, like, he's even admitted he's done a bad job plenty of times. But there has to be a level of putting ego aside. In the end, however the negotiation was done with Terry McLaurin, ego was put aside to a point where the commander said, that's enough, we're going to get this done and we're going to move forward. Right? Like, whatever went on behind the scenes, we're not going to know everything, but it was enough where it got done. That didn't happen. Ego and digging your heels in is what happened in Dallas, and that's why Micah Parsons is in Green Bay. And the Packers said, this is a guy that can help us win a Super Bowl, make us better defensively, and we're going to pay him a crap ton of money. And Jerry Jones is sitting there with a 30-year-old defensive tackle and a couple of first-round picks. Now, Dallas has certainly drafted some talented players in the past, so it could work out in more of the long term there. But if you're in win-now mode, you're not trading for a 30-year-old defensive tackle and two first-round picks that you don't know what those picks are going to be. Like, we overvalue draft picks far too much in sports. We really do. It doesn't mean there isn't value in them, especially if you're rebuilding like the Wizards. You want all the draft picks you can get. But if you're a team that's trying to win now, those are players that may help you down the road and may not. Micah Parsons was going to help you. And instead, you play this game of let's get two first-round picks. You trade a star player for two first-round picks when you're looking to win 3 years down the road. Again, the Commanders paid Terry McLaurin instead of trading him because they're trying to win now. Now, am I saying they would get two first-round picks at this point? Probably not. But could they have gotten one and like a fourth or something? I mean, who knows? Maybe. There's a chance. But the point is that they didn't go that route because they're looking to win now. Time and time again, we are told by Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones and any other Joneses, and they're trying to win now. Your actions tell us something different. Your actions tell us that this is a game. That's all that it is. It's a game. And it's great for anybody that does not root for the Cowboys. But let's stop pretending that the Cowboys are about winning first. They're about sustaining relevance. That's what the Cowboys want. They want to sustain relevance. And they sustain it by winning enough games during the regular season and constantly being in the news cycle and trending on social media, and that's it. That's what matters. Because win now decisions look very different than what the Dallas Cowboys have done over the years. Especially when you dragged out these other negotiations. First off, if you were going to move on from a player instead of paying him, Ezekiel Elliott was that guy, not Micah Parsons. Zeke was the guy you moved on from. Not drag out that conversation forever, let him go down and work out in Cabo, and then you pay him, and then you never get the same performance again because running back. Dak, you've done it twice, and then you end up paying him. You drag it out, and it just costs more because another guy's past you. Like, the Cowboys are that dad that spends all this time trying to pass the trucks on the highway only to sit at a rest stop and then watch everybody pass him. Like, that's how these negotiations go. They want to outsmart everybody and get by them all, and then they get stalled, and then everybody else handles their negotiation with their quarterback or whatever the position is they're trying to negotiate with. Then they just have to pay more and deal with all of that all over again. CeeDee Lamb, same thing. It's all the same. It's like, you know you're going to have to pay these guys or just move on from them. Did the Chiefs waste any time with Tyreek Hill? No, they said, you know what? We could pay him more. We've got Patrick Mahomes. It'll make everybody around him better. And we'll just figure it out at receiver. Now, has it been a bumpy road at times? Sure. But you have Patrick Mahomes. I get it. Dak Prescott's not Patrick Mahomes. And the Chiefs were in a much better spot where they could make these decisions to a point. But, like, in reality, you're just kicking the can down the road if you're Dallas. Owners, listen, I've said this for years, and I know it's not going to change because it's like the government, where, like, the government's in charge of their own term limits and their own job security. So, like, why is it ever going to change? Like, yes, we should have, not to get political on this, but we should have term limits on everybody in every position in the government, period, as opposed to, like, lifelong dum-dums that do nothing and then, like, suddenly care when it's about re-election. Same thing with owners in the NFL. Like, owners have way too much power. Way too much power. You can be horrible at running a franchise, but you're still in charge. Still keep that franchise. Like, they should be treated... Owners of NFL franchises should be treated like CEOs. Where you can be fired. You can be forced out. If your team's not doing well. And it's one thing if, like, the team's not doing well because you're rebuilding or whatever. It's like, it's another if you just don't care. And it's just clear there are some organizations out there. Like, Jerry Jones cares enough where he wants his team to be relevant, but it's not enough where you want to truly compete for a Super Bowl and do all the things that you needed to do. Then there's other teams around the NFL where you look at some of these owners. Again, we had it in Washington for years where it's like, it's so bad. How... It should be treated like a job. That's really what it needs to be. The problem is that the owners are in charge, and they're not going to change that. It's like politicians are in charge. Unless you vote them out, it ain't changing. So it's just again, we got lucky in D.C. because there were extenuating circumstances that finally forced out a guy in Dan Snyder that should have never been there in the first place. Donald Sterling with the Clippers was one. These guys have to be forced out or their franchise is suddenly worth so much money that they say, you know what, it ain't even worth it. I came in this to make a ton of money. I'm going to cash out, make a few extra billion, and get the hell out. Like, problem is franchises are getting so valuable and so expensive now that it's getting to the point where even billionaires can't afford them. You got to bring in more people. So, yeah, private equity's coming in, like, all this stuff. So, you're getting to the point now where it's like, there needs to be a better system. There just does. Now, again, I'm not saying that, like, oh, Jerry Jones to the point where he should be forced out again, I want him to be there forever, but there are a lot of organizations that are consistently bad for an extended period of time with no hope in sight. And that's just accepted. It's like, fine, that's fine. And I get it. The NFL's king. All these franchises continue to increase in value. And the only way that a fan base can ever get their point across is not showing up to games. You know when people started to really pay attention to how bad things were in Washington, like within the organization? is when we had Eagles fans showing up to a meaningless game the last week of the regular season when the Redskins were already eliminated, and it was full of Eagles fans, and people stopped showing up. I remember on this station, on 980, for years, I would say, stop showing up to games. It's the only way you're going to make your point. This fan base deserves better. Everybody deserves better. The only way you make your point is you hit them in the wallet. Affect the bank account of that owner. That's the only way that you can do it. Fans have power. It just takes time. You got to be willing to do it. It's like players wanting guaranteed contracts. Okay, then you better be ready to go on strike. Like, that's the only way. Save your money, go on strike. You have power. Can't have a league without players, but you all got to come together and do it. It's the same way for fan bases. Now, luckily, we don't have to worry about that in Washington anymore, but there's other fan bases that have to deal with that. And if you're not going to make a point that way that's very visible, both from a income standpoint, a revenue stream standpoint, but also on top of that from a visual standpoint of, like, nobody that is a fan of the team is in the stands of that stadium, you don't make those points, nothing's changing. It's really not. And even then, that's not even a guarantee that that's going to change anything. But, you know, it's just owners have way too much power in pro sports in general, not just the NFL. But the NFL is the most glaring one because it's the NFL and it's king. Like, that's just, that's how it works. Thank God we don't have to worry about that here. Whew. God, I never thought that would be over. Still, when you think about it, it's been a short period of time. Like, we're riding this blissful rainbow right now, but, man, that was, there were so many times we thought that car was going to turn around and he's coming back in. And we're like, no, no. Oh, now we can just focus on the Giants and the Packers and a new stadium. Oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Nick Ashew on the Fan.